Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, Iceman Insights, starring senior writer, webmaster, Vice President of Offbeat Shenanigans, Michael Shockley, and myself, the Dirty D, Derek Benigni. How you doing today, Michael?
Better than your laptop.
Indeed. As people will know, the pace of today's show will be about 1.5 times faster than normal.
Yeah.
As we are running quickly out of battery life.
Yeah.
Just like the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Evansville Iceman playoff hopes.
So since our last show, the Icemen went 1-2 on the 3-3 road trip. The team is now 30-29-11 on the season, officially eliminated from playoff contention and locked into 10th place in the Eastern Conference. Can't move up, can't move down. The road trip started Thursday at Cincinnati, a 4-1 loss. Scored the first goal of the game, Dylan Clark, and had the first 9 shots on goal in the game, and then it was all Cyclones after that. They scored 4 unanswered goals and outshot us 33-19 the rest of the way.
And their 17th-ranked power play went 2-for-3 against us.
Friday at Wheeling, another 4-1 loss. This time it was a scoreless first period, and then we got blitzed in the second period 3-0. Thomas Larkin had our only goal early in the third period, and Wheeling added another one later to finish it off as 4-1, and that is the loss that officially eliminated us from postseason contention.
Love watching hockey in that Wheeling building. I mean, it's an old building. It's a really old building. But with the fact that it's 15 feet shorter and they take it out of a neutral zone, it leads to really exciting hockey.
Hmm. Maybe we should do that here as a gimmick one time. Just move the boards in and make the neutral zone smaller.
Well, the way our boards have been bouncing around, there may be a time where they have to shorten them up.
And then the trip finished Saturday at Elmira on a high note, a 7-2 victory, our only victory in 5 games against Elmira this year.
Broke a 5-game losing streak as well.
Yeah, it's the 4th time we have scored 7 in a game this season. The first, though, on the road. Alex Aliardi, 2 goals and an assist. Matt Lowry, Dalton Levier, and Peter Sakaris each had a goal and an assist. Dylan Clark and Josh Beaulieu also scored. And it was actually a close game for a while. It was tied 2-2 midway through the second period, and then the Icemen just turned it on and pulled away.
Yeah, it actually wasn't that close. A couple of breakdowns. The Iceman looked awesome. Iceman looked like the Iceman of old, December, January Iceman. And there was just a couple of breakdowns that led right into our net. But and the funny thing is Corey Bellamy, not Rob Bellamy, the captain, but Corey Bellamy, the younger brother that's just a goon, He kills the Iceman. 5 points this season and a -4 rating against the Iceman, a goal and 2 assists, and +6. So three of his 5 points.
So if he took his stats against the Iceman out, he'd be really
yes.
bad.
Yeah, he would have had 2 points and -10.
Hmm. So he would like to play us all the time.
Yep, and 38 minutes in penalties.
And we would like to never play them.
Yeah.
Unless it was going to actually happen like Saturday's game did.
Yep.
So there you go. That's what happened since our last show.
Yep, eliminated from the playoffs. Disappointed. I had predicted top 5 for the club. We were there for a while, but boy, when the and one thing I want to bring up for next week's show is I have the frustrating thing for me is I don't understand why, and it's something that I want to watch. That I've got a theory developing now, but really don't understand how it went so bad so quick. And the injuries are part of it, and the call ups are part of it, but that happens to every team. And
right.
But when we got healthy and we got our players back,
it didn't get any better.
It didn't get any better.
Right. Yeah. So. That's. Yeah. It's. I think it's got all of us flummoxed. So. Yeah. Any other thoughts from the road trip? Any other observations? As far as
worst bus trip ever.
Oh, really?
Yes. Going to Cincy, and then after the game, driving 4 hours to Wheeling to unload, then playing in Wheeling, and then driving 6 hours to get to Reading to unload at 5 in the morning, and then sleep till noon, and then get up and kind of wake up and then quickly head off to do another game, and then drive 12 hours on the ride home on the bus. I was exhausted.
How much sleep did you get over the
I have no idea. I spent, I mean, what is that? That's 22 hours on the bus in 3 days.
Whew.
And I did not sleep well the first two nights. I slept hard that third night. I mean,
catching up.
Yes.
You just hit that wall.
Well, and no matter how uncomfortable you were, your body has to sleep at a point. And that's where I was on Sunday or Saturday night.
Hmm.
And now the Orthopedic Associates Injury and Transaction Report.
A couple of surgery updates. Jacob Johnston had wrist surgery on Thursday last week, and Matt Shepke had his shoulder surgery last Friday. All reports are that both went well.
Yep, that's what everyone said. Jacob Johnston called Matt Krug, talked to him a little bit on Saturday, and Shepke was a Twitter maniac.
Cool, good. Conky update on Dustin Hoppner. Patafi said that he's making progress and has started some light activities, but he is officially out for the rest of the season now. All
yes.
Two games of it.
Yep.
Tristan King did not play Friday at Wheeling due to a stomach bug. He returned on Saturday at Elmira.
It's the same one that's kind of nipped everyone else. Jacob Johnson missed a game. We had to fly him out to Elmira. Dalton Levier missed a game.
A couple games.
Yeah, we had to fly him down. So pretty bad stuff.
Antoine Corbin didn't play on Saturday. Suffered a knee injury on Friday. Done for the rest of the season as well.
That I don't know if that's official or not.
Okay.
So I would assume so. He's on crutches and everything else. But when I did the last Paul's Pharmacy update with Patafi, he didn't say that one specifically.
Gotcha. And then Guy Lapine also did not play Saturday and likely out for the season. Re-aggravated a previous hand injury from his AHL stint during a fight on Friday.
Yep.
And how was that fight?
It was...
They both got unsportsmanlike for removing their helmets.
Yep, and it started off good. I was really disappointed in McGrath. Lapine went out there. McGrath challenged him. It was McGrath's second shift of the game. He had one shift earlier, and then he went out there, and he dropped the gloves and did the whole dance, and then he just locked on and held on, which I understand. And Guy just pummeled him in the head and got him with a couple of uppercuts. But then Guy had injured his hand in the middle of the fight. So he had his right arm back and yelling at the linesman saying, I'm hurt, you need to break this up.
Uh-huh.
And so the linesman came in, and he's yelling at McGrath saying, hey, I'm out. I can't do anything else. And McGrath still hasn't thrown a punch. He's tried to bury his head and holding on for dear life. And he's trying to wrestle Lapine to the ice, and Lapine's not going down. And he keeps just saying, you know, linesman, get in here. My hand is in trouble. And then McGrath lets go, dives, takes him out at the legs, and wrestles Lapine down to the ice. And then gets up like he's the heavyweight champion of the world to the home crowd. It was a schmuck move. It was. And I've done 70 games this season. Almost everybody I've come across, like Bellamy Brothers and everything else, they're all, you know, they all abide by the code. They're all good guys. Yannick Tifu, whether you like them or hate them, they're at least decent guys. And that was the first time this season that I just saw something that was just so horrible. I mean, just getting wailed on and then take advantage of a guy who's telling you he's injured and then celebrating on top of it. It was just horrible.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a D-bag move.
Yep.
The rest of the scratches over the weekend were healthy. I know on Friday at Wheeling that included Levier and Krug both sat out, but they were both healthy?
Yes, they were.
Gotcha. And then one last transaction that I thought was interesting. The Buffalo Sabres have lost both of their NHL goalies and now their number one AHL goalie to injury. So the Sabres are now down into the NHL to their backup AHL goalie and a guy who has spent most of the season in the ECHL by the name of Andrei Makarov. And that's a name that should ring a bell to Iceman fans because he has spent most of his rookie season with the Comets this year. Recently, he has... Once the injuries have started hitting, he's been up in the AHL with Rochester, which is Buffalo's AHL affiliate. He's played 6 games for them. And on Tuesday, he was called up to the Sabres. He's in his first year of a 3-year entry-level deal with the Sabres. They have 4 games left, so if he gets into one of those games, he could be the first Comets ECHL player to make it to the NHL. Now, back in the day, when they were in the IHL, they had a bunch of players that moved up to the NHL, but... from this era of Comets hockey with the ECHL era, it would be the first.
And wouldn't it be amazing that they work so hard to battle back into playoff contention? They're holding down that 8 spot. Florida's right behind them. And then they lose Makarov. And if they lose their next 3 games and Florida picks up a couple of points,
they could miss,
they
out.
Could miss out on the playoffs because their player gets called out to the NHL.
Yeah, that's one of those bittersweet kind of things.
Yep. Anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to IcemanManiacs.com and click the red graphic to visit the Maniac message board for the updated roster. And it gets very important because pretty soon all these players will move on to nicer pastures over the summer, whether that be the golf course or home or whatever, and then we'll start the collection process for next year's team.
Yep. And as that happens over the off season, I always, anything that's announced or noticed on other websites where it's not officially announced, rumors and everything that's out there is put up on the message board, so it's all compiled in one place. And anytime over the summer, if you want to know where things stand, check out the message board.
Talking points, Austin Medeski, the Mayday.
Yes, he returned to the Iceman after getting sent down last week, played all 3 games on the trip, had 1 assist and was -2. How'd he look?
I love him. Absolutely love him. Now, the thing is, he's a big body, but he's not a defensive defenseman. He is an offensive moving defenseman. Mm-hmm. So you got to get used to that. But boy, Cincinnati, he came down the left wing. It was in the second period, and he looked like he was going to hold up. He did like a little mohawk move. It's wearing the heels and toes are together. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for the forward to think he was hitting the brakes. And then he kept on going and came in backhand from the boards and hit the far post. And there's one right there. That one goes in, and all of a sudden the momentum might have changed, but it just clanked and went rattling out. But
that's the kind of move a goal-scoring winger usually
makes.
Yes,
yeah. And boy, he is just super fun to watch. Both he and Larkin sent down just to get playing time. Mm-hmm. We will never see these guys again. I don't think. So this is kind of it.
Their swan song with
us. Yes. And Springfield called and said, we want him to play 25, 30 minutes a game. So.
And Powell was like, okie dokie. Yep. got a longer look at Mark Anthoin. He played both Friday and Saturday, was scoreless and -2. How'd he look? You got a little more.
Yep. He's the player that he is. He's a two-way forward. He's a grit forward. He has some offensive flair. It's just he's at that point where I think he's trying to keep up to the pace of the game mentally and thinking more. Mm-hmm. When it slows down for him, when he gets a little bit more confident, he'll score some goals. So he's had a couple of pucks that just kind of walked off of his stick. Ray was, he was cruising in the slot and everything else. But really like him. A Jason Dale kind of character.
Wait, mate. Who?
Jason Dale! We may be able to see him on Friday. He got activated off a 21-day IR.
You get your taters in a bunch up in the press box.
I'm going to say, that would be funny if I said that the whole game.
That's the next to last game of the season. Why
exactly.
Not?
Exactly. But he's a Jason Dale, but more physical. A more physical Jason Dale is what I would describe Anthoin as.
Pretty cool. All right, ECHL Awards will be announced this week and next week. The Community Service Award will be announced this Friday, the 11th. And as mentioned on our last show, Nathan Moon is the Iceman's candidate for that.
Yep.
So we'll see if he made the cut there. And then next week, there's a bunch of awards that are going to be announced next week. But a couple of them I think are worth noting here. First off, on Monday, the Rookie of the Year will be announced. And my question for you is, do you think Jeremy Langlois could win that? He's back in the ECHL with Stockton. He's got 4 points in 4 games since he was sent down. 56 points in 53 games this season. There are 7 rookies that have more than 50 points, so there's a lot of decent candidates. First in the league is William Rapuzzi from Idaho. He's got 57 points in 58 games. Langlois is right behind him with 56 and 53. The only of the other 50-point guys that is at more than a point per game is Greg Miller from Bakersfield. He's got 51 points in 49 games.
I'm not sure what the criteria is because I gave you an actual ECHL ballot last time we were here last week, and they provided us with the rookies of the year.
Who are eligible.
Yes, and Langlois was not on it because he was called up at the time. So I'm not sure what the eligibility requirements are. Same like Anthony Luciani, Wade Megan from Cincinnati. Those guys weren't on it either because they've both been, Wade Megan's been called up since December. Luciani has just been recently called up. He spent more games up at the A than Langlois has had. So I don't know how all that works, but so, do know
you
that.
You showed me the ballot, but I didn't see the list of eligible rookies.
And I can pull that up later for you.
If Langlois wasn't on it just because he wasn't in the E at the time the ballots were sent out, then that could screw him out of winning the award.
Yep.
If people just look at the list before they vote and they don't see his name on not going
to
win it.
But I was under the impression that you had to go off of that list.
Right.
Not that he wasn't even available.
Huh.
So yeah, I don't know. Don't call the league and complain. I have no idea what the rules are.
I wonder if there's a delineation between guys that are under ECHL contract and guys that are sent down from the AHL.
That I don't know.
We'd have to look at the list and explore further, and that would take a lot of research. But
yep.
So what you're saying is Langlois wasn't on the list.
And our battery life is currently at 43%.
We're moving.
But we've gone up to 2 hours and 25 minutes left from that hour and 47. So
we may get this show in. Langlois may or may not win it. And if he doesn't, it might be because he wasn't on the ballot.
Yep.
So there you go. The other one to consider is Defenseman of the Year will be announced on Wednesday the 16th. What do you think about Matt Krug? He was the top scoring D in the league for a while, but he's since slipped out of the top five. He's still seventh with 36 points. Fifth among defensemen with 12 goals. He is leading all defensemen in penalty minutes and majors. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing remains up to you to decide. He had 10 goals and 19 assists in his first 43 games, but since then he just has 2 goals and 5 assists in his last 24. So he has definitely taken a hit as the depth on D fell apart for the Icemen, and he was asked to take on a more prominent role.
So, I think he's in that. He's in the discussion. He's a top five defenseman in the league for sure. It like you said, it all comes down to the people that are voting. How do they put credibility in those penalty minute, those tough guys, those enforcer, those team protector kind of penalties or not? And some guys will and some guys won't. So I could see him getting votes that'll put him in the top three. But with Ratchuk and from Wheeling and Kiyoski, who may get Rookie of the Year nominations. He's got 14 goals, big, tall, rangy defenseman from the Reading Royals. I don't know if, and not to mention Sam Fatorik has, you know.
From Kalamazoo.
How can you, I mean, that guy's the ultimate professional, and he's really tough to vote against. I put him down for, I think he was my number three for MVP of the league for myself, so. I had him number three for Sportsman of the Year.
Mm. So yeah, I don't think Krug will win that, and I think that the penalty minutes could very well be the determining factor there, because it totally depends on your perspective. Some people will look at a lot of penalty minutes and a lot of majors and say, yeah, he's that tough guy that stands up for his teammates. Other people will look at those and go, he's undisciplined. Why should he be given an award for racking up that many penalty minutes and hurting his team so often? And with Krug, it really, that is, both elements of that come into play. He is that tough guy who stands up for his teammates and should be applauded for that. But at the same time, he does take a lot of bad penalties. So either perspective is valid in that case. So I would guess, all other things being equal, that would probably hurt him a little more than it would help him, and I would not expect him to win it. He may be one of the finalists, but I don't think he'll win it.
Yep.
Next bullet we got here, the Maniac Madness Bracket Contest was putrid in general. Nobody came even close to the perfect billion-dollar bracket, not surprisingly.
Yeah, I could have told you that.
Yeah, but we were so far, we couldn't see it with a telescope and a map. The best was 42 out of 63 games correct. Our winner by attrition was Jeff Meisenhelder, off-ice official.
Nice. Yes, indeed.
So he is excited to get his hands on Steven Rickard's Pink Flamingo.
Woohoo!
Runner-up was Rick Llewellyn, our champion from last year. He was a distant second, but he was the runner-up, so
but he probably will Photoshop his hands onto Rickard's Pink Flamingo.
That might violate Facebook's terms of service.
Ooh, make sure you verify that, Rick.
Yeah. Maniacs Go Bowling.
Sounded like it was awesome.
Yeah. Saturday at Willow Bowling Center, organized by Steven Rickard and Jason Roberts. Bill Sadler won the Best Dude Bowler Award. Heather Ray was the Best Sweetheart Bowler. William Healy was the Best Blizzard's Buddy Bowler. Boy, that's alliteration. Jim Brutlag won the coveted Hey You Suck Award. And over 30 people showed up, and a good time was had by all. I talked to Dixie about it, and she said everybody seemed to have a really good time, and all the pictures from online looked like it was an awesome time.
And they did have my play-by-play going on while they were bowling, correct?
I think they tried, but there were technical issues.
Really?
Yeah. Supposedly, they tried to hook
up. Because they couldn't turn it in to FM or AM or the internet or the TuneIn app?
I think they were
trying. People are going to rag on me for technical difficulties. You got 35 maniacs in a bowling alley, and none of them can figure out how to put me on the radio.
Hey, don't look at me. It was Stephen Rickard's thing. You have to call and fry his taters.
Yep.
Next thing, road trip. Any other issues from the Cincy Wheeling Elmira trip worth mentioning?
Yes. It was totally awesome for me, not so totally awesome for someone else, but Caden Patafi made the trip.
Okay.
Brian wanted to take him along. Brian's days, he's talked about it on this show before, that retirement is closer than farther away at this point in his career, and so he wanted to take Caden, his son, with him on the trip and have fun together and everything else. Well, Pataf is my roommate, so I got kicked out of my room. We took 21 players with the injuries and Mark Anthoyne being signed and everything else. We took 21 players. Mm-hmm. So you've got one additional player and one additional broadcaster. So I got paired up with Matt Krug.
Seriously?
For the road trip. Yep.
Wow.
So, and he was, you know, it was going to be one player, and whatever player it was going to be upset. Why am I roaming with the broadcaster? Uh-huh. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, this Matt's obviously one of my favorite. He's a Detroit boy, so I was in absolute heaven. So I was calling.
Did you apologize?
No, but he's like, why am I rooming with the broadcaster? Why am I? I'm rooming with you again. That's what he said on Saturday. He's like, no offense. I'm like, thanks.
Anytime you start a sentence with no offense, you're going to offend someone.
But we had fun, and there was things said and things done that are just not radio worthy. But he's one of my favorites. I think he's a class act, and getting to spend a couple of nights with him. And I told my wife, I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm rooming with Matt Krug. And I said, of course, though, the reality is we'll probably just sit there and talk about missing our little princesses at home. So,
yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Cool. And then road trip part two, you promised last week that you would share some stories from the Florida and Orlando trip that we just ran out of time for last week. So
yeah, now we're running out of battery life. Really cool trip. You got to go. We kind of laughed about early on about Orlando doing that ECHL All-Star game in next year. Boy, if you can get to that, it's worth going. It's better than the Ford Center.
It's a huge brand new NBA quality
18,000 and everything else. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's in a nice downtown little area. So a lot of fun. Probably the best story I have is we rolled into town. And we played the game Thursday night, and we lost, and everyone went out to eat afterwards. We just walked over to this place called the Husky Dog or something like that.
Sounds like a really seedy strip club.
But it was really interesting because all the players were there, and they were in one section. All the staff was there. We were in another section. And then the Orlando Brass, Joe Ernst, vice president of the ECHL, and all the officials, including the regional supervisor, were in another section.
So everyone was there at the same time.
And then everyone is screaming and yelling in the bar because it is the... We had no idea what was going on. Well, Florida is in the NCAA Sweet 16 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, and coach being coach has got to stir the pot. So everyone's rooting for Florida. He starts rooting for UCLA. And it was to the point, like, Joe Ernst came over to the table and everything else, and we were talking, and I would glance up and see UCLA score, and I would just bump him. And he would be like, UCLA, yeah! And people are getting upset, and these girls in another booth were all upset. And so we just kind of doing what we do. Just
trying
being
to get tossed out of a bar.
Just kind of being thorns, and everyone, we're just keeping it real. So... But it was funny. It got to the point where I would just nudge him, and he would just scream like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah!
He didn't even look up to see what happened. Yeah, no. He had no idea. So just some of the fun that we have on the road trip there.
Very nice. Yeah. All right.
Would you rather?
Would you rather, something to ponder, would you rather suck all season like last year, Or, like this year, start hot, show great promise, and then completely fall apart down the stretch?
I would have to say this year. That would... I don't know how you broadcast a season like last year. Knowing in
from a broadcaster standpoint, yeah, you would not want to do last year.
Well, even as a fan, you go into October and you know you're already sunk. I mean, we knew that team was not going to be competitive.
And then they came out and started like 0-6-1 and yes, proved it.
Yeah, and then no, this one was better. But like I said in the first segment, my biggest frustration is I don't understand why. And so
we'll have to delve into that
next
week.
Yeah. We'll delve into that next
week. I think both ways, you know, it really was painful sucking for an entire year. But at the same time, by the end of the season, you're resigned to your fate. You're less disappointed. I think this year was more disappointing because we thought the team would be good, and they proved early on that they had the potential to be good. And they were in second place in the conference, and everything was looking great. And then it's like a switch was flipped, and it was all downhill from there, and they just never could get it going again. And to know how high this team's high could be made it that much harder to take the lows.
Yeah, and we talked about it, what was it, 4 weeks ago when we did the one show, because we had the break when I went down to Florida with the team. But you asked me, did you think we could make it or not? I honestly thought we were going on a run. Mm-hmm. Even that all the final eight games were on the road, I thought we were healthy. We gotten Larkin back, and I thought we gotten Lapine back, and I thought we're going on a run here. We're gonna go 7-3. We're gonna go 8-2. We're gonna go to Reading, and we're gonna defeat them in the first round, and we're gonna go from there. And I was as shocked as anyone else I was still shocked. I honestly thought we still might have a chance when we lost to Cincy, when we lost to Orlando the last Saturday night. I really thought, you know, we get a win there, we get a win in Elmira, we can salvage this thing, and just never happened. So it was more disappointing, that's for sure.
So it's another prediction like your Vancouver Canucks Stanley Cup prediction last year.
No, there's no prediction like that one. But, hey, in all fairness, my Vancouver Canucks prediction is not much worse than your Iceman prediction of last year when you said that they were playoff caliber and they were never even in it. So they did win one more game.
This year, I was closer than you because us way up high in the standings.
Yeah, oh yeah. There's no doubt about it.
So, but the point is, neither of us are very good at predictions.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, would you rather? I think that's an interesting thing to throw out to the fans or the people listening to this. Post that on Facebook. Would you rather suck all year or start hot and then fall apart? As a fan, what is more frustrating and what would you rather go through? Obviously, we would all like to just be in the playoffs, but when you have to compare last year and this year, which one is preferable, you know, the best of the worst, so to speak? Yep.
Indeed, indeed. Let's fast forward 6 months. Ooh, I like this.
Yeah, we're going to fast forward 6 months, and hopefully we have laptop battery in 6 months. So, since we are officially eliminated from the playoffs, it's time to kind of start looking forward to next season. So, when the 2014-15 season begins, I have some questions for you. First question, will the Icemen still be affiliated with Columbus and Springfield?
Yes, but I think there will be another affiliation.
Really?
Yep.
You think we'll have a dual affiliation?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Is that just your opinion, or do you have inside information?
No, that's just my opinion.
Interesting. I don't know. Pyle was awfully against having two affiliates when he first took this job.
He was, until he developed Jeremy Langlois so that he could be traded away, and we filled out Utica's roster for them as well as
they
Bridgeport's.
Owe us.
Exactly. And there is a lot of they owing, but they don't have to pay. So I think he may dabble in dual affiliation just to have more talent down here next year.
You know, we really didn't get that much in the way of talent from Columbus this year. Larkin is the only Columbus signed guy that we had for any length of time. Most of the guys that got sent down were from Springfield.
Yep.
They were on AHL deals in Springfield, or other guys like Tristan King, who came from the Dallas Stars.
Yep. Kalitochkin from Carolina.
Kevin Lynch from Grand Rapids. So, and Sawyer Hanna from the Chicago Wolves early in the season. So there's a bunch of guys that we got from other teams that weren't actually affiliates. But as far as the Columbus-Springfield affiliation, almost all of our interaction was directly with the Falcons. There was very little from Columbus, and that was just Larkin because they've got so many D in the pipeline. And like you said, I would even if we are affiliated with them next year, I don't expect to see Larkin back here. I think he'll stick in Springfield next year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's
too good.
He's never coming back here.
Second question: will Jeff Pyle still be the head coach of the Icemen?
I'm going to say yes. But that's a 50-50 gamble.
Yeah.
So many of us, just like the players, we're on one-year deals.
Yeah.
And May 1st is rolling around the corner, and our deals are done.
Right. And, you know, last year we all thought Crum would get another year. We thought, you know, it was growing pains the first season in the ECHL. Okay, it sucked, but he's learned a lot, and he'll get another year to try to sort it out. And then if he doesn't, then okay, yeah, send him packing. And I think this year, my general thought is it started hot and it fell apart, but it was still an improvement over last year. And I think ultimately Ron Geary's not the kind of guy who's going to hire a guy for one season and then send him packing. I do think, though, if Pyle is back next year, if we don't make the playoffs again, that'll be his last year here. I don't think Geary will stand for back-to-back years missing the playoffs for a guy who came in with so much promise. But if Pyle does come back next year, I would expect us to make the playoffs. I think he's probably learned a lot about this season, too. Yeah. Next question, will Josh Beaulieu still be the captain of the Icemen?
Yes.
You think he'll definitely be back?
I think so.
Will Matt Krug be on the Icemen roster?
I think he will be.
You do?
I think he will. I think there's a lot of people that have interest in him. I think there's a lot of teams that don't have interest in him. So not in a, like you said about the penalty minutes. Coaches look at it the same way.
Right.
He's a great enforcer, blah, blah, blah. Other people are going to say he's undisciplined. So I think a lot of people have him scratched off the list. So I think he's on the radar for about 8 teams, and do you go where you know, or do you go somewhere else? So,
and I
don't think he's going to maximize. And I'm just throwing numbers. I don't know any of the numbers, but you know, the top end guys, from what I understand in this league, make around $1,000 to $1,200 a week.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to command that money. He's not going to bargain. And Evansville's offering $750, and this one's offering $775, and Kalamazoo's offering $800, and then Gwinnett's going to come in with this $1,150 a week deal. That isn't going to happen. He's going to be in the same ballpark. So, and all things being equal, I think he's going to come back one more year with Jeff Pyle.
So you think Pyle, in Pyle's eyes, and obviously you don't know, but just from what you've interacted with him, you think Pyle sees Krug as the positives outweigh the negatives?
Yes.
Okay. Last question. Will Garrett Bartus be one of the Icemen goalies?
Man, that is a tough one. And what makes that tough is what's up with Mike Clemente, because his contract with Springfield is done.
Right. He's on a one-year deal.
And they've got a lot of goalers coming in the pipeline.
Right.
So he is not going back to Springfield.
I wouldn't think so.
So does he get picked up by another AHL team? He's got a 19-18 record, .282 goals against average, .903 save percentage, didn't make the playoffs. So he's probably not going to command an AHL contract. So now,
if he's available at this level,
you can sign him and sign him to a ECHL contract. So when Bob Brovsky gets injured for 5 times a year like he seems to do every season, we don't have to send him up. And so Clemente at that point has more value than he has the same value as a Garrett Bartus.
Yeah.
Because Bartus, we never had to send him up either.
Right.
So, and then it comes down to which one commands more money. So that one I'm not sure about because of the Clemente thing.
I would think Clemente would command more money.
Yes.
But the question to me is, would you end up in sort of an Alan York situation where, because of his pedigree of having been on an AHL deal this season, will he be one of those first names that gets called up from other teams when they have injuries in the A?
I don't think so. And again, nothing against Mike Clemente, but he doesn't have the resume of an Alan York.
That's true.
Alan York had NHL games, 13 of them. So there's a whole different world between Alan York and Mike Clemente.
Indeed.
Regardless of what they say in the asylum.
I thought that was the most interesting of these 5 questions.
Yep.
Is Bartus, and on top of Clemente, the affiliation would play a role there too. If we have 2 affiliates, then we may end up with 2 affiliate goalies like we had last year.
Yep.
So That may totally throw both of them out.
Well,
of
you still may have a Garrett Bartus on the club then. Maybe you hold on to him for a while. No,
have a third for insurance.
Because that was the part of the problem that Crom had 2 years ago with the two goalies getting called up at the same time, and he was left with nothing.
I would say this, though. If you get two affiliate goalies, either from the same affiliation or from two separate affiliations, Bartus would be the third. I don't think you would pay Clemente to stick around as the third goalie.
Yep, makes sense. Shockers, hockey, rock, song of the week.
All right, here's one that's going to make everyone feel old. April 8th, 2000. That's 14 years ago from the day we're recording this. 14 years and a day ago from the day most people are listening to this. That was the classic Christopher Walken, Will Ferrell SNL skit that gave the world the phrase, "More cowbell." It featured a song from 1976, which is my song this week. It's also fitting because our playoff hopes are officially dead. It's a song I played pregame at Swander every now and then. This is Blue Oyster Cult, "Don't Fear the Reaper."
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump. First Circus, Stephen Ricker's testicles. D-Buddy, no touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis. Vitellary Filippula.
Use your big boy word.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked! Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And we're back. Iceman Insights. Insights.
Iceman Insights.
Iceman Insights, live from the studio, WYIR, downtown Evansville, 96.9 FM.
Wired. Froth and grind.
Shocker. Dirty D. Let's go. Let's talk about the Birds and the BJs.
Let's, shall we? The Springfield Falcons have now clinched the Northeast Division for the second straight season, and they will thus have home ice advantage in the first round of the AHL playoffs. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting to note. Friday's game at St. John's was perhaps one of the wildest games you'll ever hear about. The Falcons were up 5-3 after one period. 8 goals in the first period in that game. And they ended up winning it 8-7 in overtime. In that game, Jack Skilly, a forward for the Falcons, had 4 goals and was promptly called up by the Blue Jackets on Monday. No report as to whether or not he celebrated his 4-goal game Joe Thornton style.
Yep. Whip it out.
And then on the Blue Jackets front, Thursday, they beat the Flyers 2-0 in Philly. That was the goalie swap from a few years ago because Bobrovsky was in net for the Jackets and Steve Mason in net for the Flyers.
When Columbus traded for Bobrovsky the other year, they picked up an additional second-round pick, which turned into Oscar Danks, who is their...
Who's one of their hot young goalies.
That is playing in the OHL right now.
And I think he will turn pro next season, will he not?
That I'm not sure about. I know he did play in the prospect game up in Traverse City this last summer.
Friday the 4th, the Jackets lost 4-3 to the Chicago Blackhawks. The game winner was scored with 3.7 seconds left.
In bizarre fashion, too, with the winger behind the goalie in the crease and digging the loose puck out through the goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that was kind of a fluky, funky goal. There were a ton of Blackhawks fans in Columbus for that game. It sounded like the Madhouse on Madison when they scored the game winner. It was crazy. We were actually watching that. We were in Chicago over the weekend, so we were watching that on Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago. And it sounded like a Blackhawks home game when they scored that game winner. And when they panned the crowd, it was like 2/3 red, 1/3 blue. So it's one of those times when you lose a home game, but it didn't really feel like a home game.
Yep.
And then they rebounded on Sunday the 6th, beat the Islanders 4-0, Bobrovsky's second shutout in 4 days. They are playing tonight as we record this on Tuesday, and then their regular season concludes with 3 straight on the road. Their game tonight, as you listen to this, Wednesday the 9th, is the makeup date for the game that was suspended when Rich Peverly had his cardiac attack.
Yeah, just crazy.
That was scary. So that's one of those oddball games where the Peverly thing happened early in the game, so they suspended it, and when they play the makeup game, they will play a full 60 minutes. But because the Blue Jackets were up 1-0 when Peverly had his attack, the game will start with the score at 1-0.
Wow.
So it'll be a 60-minute game starting as any other game, except that Columbus gets they're basically spotted a goal.
Nice.
Because when they originally played that game, or tried to play that game, they had already scored. So kind of a rarity.
Yep, and you can't take goals away, not in this day and age with agents and bonuses and everything else.
So officially that'll end up being like a 68-minute game or something. I'm not sure how they'll exactly handle the box score.
Yeah.
That'd be something to look at. Yep. It would be four periods, I guess. I don't know. Or you'll have a 28-minute first period.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Anyway, yeah, there you go. That's our Birds and the BJs report.
The Johnny Kells segment, Skating Down a Memory Lane, Johnny Kells inspired.
Yeah, so since, as I mentioned, I was in Chicago over the weekend, we actually stayed in Lansing, Illinois, a southern suburb of Chicago. And to get to Lansing, Illinois, after 5 hours of nothingness on Highway 41, you go through a town called Dyer, Indiana.
Ah, yes.
And for those who haven't been around since the early days of Iceman hockey, Dyer, Indiana was home to the Chi-Town Shooters, who were basically the Fort Wayne Comets before we knew the Fort Wayne Comets, because they were our top rival in the first two seasons of Iceman hockey in the old AHA.
The AHA.
So we go back to January 18th, 2009, during our inaugural season. It was the night that Darren's side officially became enemy number one. Unbelievably, the Iceman and Shooters had played four straight games without a fight. But then on January 18th, all hell broke loose in Dyer.
H-E double hockey sticks.
Yes. Chi-Town won that game 7-5. The teams combined for 259 penalty minutes, which was a season high for the inaugural Iceman season. And the coup de grace was at the end of the game. The final brawl was started by Mr. Side, who, for those who don't know, was normally their coach and general manager, but occasionally also suited up as a player.
Yep.
And in this game, he suited up as a player and was there solely to start trouble. So late in the game, he sucker punched one of the Iceman players prior to a faceoff, and by the end of the brawl that ensued, he was naked from the waist up. And if you don't believe me, there's video to prove it. In the midst of that brawl was also in the stands a fight that broke out because Erica Coy, wife of Iceman captain Isaac Coy.
He wasn't captain at this time.
No, I don't think he was the captain yet. She got into a shoving match with a female Shooters fan who got up into her face and was being belligerent in the midst of it. So you had a brawl on the ice with a half-naked hockey player and a fight in the stands between two female fans, one of whom was married to one of our players. It was the AHA at its finest. And if you want to see the video, go to YouTube and just search for Shooters Iceman Brawl. It is the first result that comes up of many, because there were a lot of brawls between those two teams. But it is the first one that comes up. Like I said, it happened on January 18th. The uploader of the video incorrectly dated it January 19th. But it's the one that's Iceman Shooters Brawl, and it's dated January 19th on YouTube. Give it a look. It's... Yeah, it's a classic. It's one of those.
Instant classic.
It really defies words. You have to watch it to truly enjoy it and appreciate it.
Defies word and defines 2 years of hockey in Evansville.
Exactly.
Brian Patafi, tweet O to week.
You can follow Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi, B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. This is typical Patafi humor. This is from a little while back, but it's a good one. Quote, there's an NAHL game tonight, which is the North American Hockey League, for those that don't know, juniors. Between the Bulls and Brahmas, between periods, do they use Zambonis or clean up with shovels?
There you go. The circus is in town.
Yeah.
Hockey 101.
All right. Again, we're running low on Hockey 101 questions, so if you have a question, send it to me via Facebook, and we'll get it on a future show. Only doing two this week. First off, from Dave Huff. He said, can you explain the difference between forechecking and backchecking?
Possibly.
If you're lucky, Dave.
Forechecking is a system. It is a way of when you don't have the puck in the opponent's zone, it is a system of attempting to either get the puck back or make the other team break out in a certain direction. So if you don't want them to move up the left wing side, you want to force them up the right wing side, you may send one guy in behind the net to force them out to their right and then put another guy in the middle of the ice to take away any passes to always force them where you want them to go.
Right. Either you try to take the puck away or dictate what they do rather than let them do what they want to do.
So forecheck is a system, and you can have one forechecker, two forecheckers. You can be very aggressive and have three forecheckers. That means you don't have control of the puck in the opponent's zone, and you are sending all three of your forwards after it. What that means is if they get past your three forwards, then they have a 3-on-2, a 4-on-2,
right,
rush back down the other
way. Yeah, the more forecheckers you send, it becomes more akin to a full-court press in basketball.
Exactly. Back check is catching up to the player in front of you. So some players that don't have any character or defensive instincts, well, let's just throw a name out, forwards. when they're not
all of them,
when they don't have an opportunity to score, they just kind of slowly float back down the ice. Other people who have character, they will attempt to catch up to those players and then either lift a stick or try to knock the puck off of their stick. So everyone can do back checking. That's just a way of getting back into the play after you've been left behind. Forechecking is a system to try and manage the other team in their zone.
Correct. And backchecking, don't use the term incorrectly. If you check someone from behind, body check someone from behind, that's not backchecking. Backchecking is a legal and advisable maneuver. Yeah. Checking from behind is completely different, and it's illegal.
Yeah, backchecking is another word for hustle.
Yeah.
For hustling back down to the ice for a guy that has passed you with the puck and you attempt to get the puck back.
Right.
This is the next one's a good question.
Yeah. This is from a random Nashville Predators fan via Jeff Meisenhelder, March Maniac Madness champion. When we first proposed doing Hockey 101, he posted this kind of as a joke. But I think for a lot of newer fans, it is a good question to ask and discuss. So the question was from some fan in Nashville. Why do goalies come out of the net to play the puck?
My answer is, why do goalies do anything?
Because they're weird.
Because they are weird. Some goalies just, they've got to touch the puck. And if they've been down there for 3 minutes and they haven't had a shot on net, they'll go flying out of that net just to play it, just to stay on that edge, I guess, of wanting to stop pucks.
Keep the blood flowing.
Other times it's a race for the puck where a guy's going to, if their forward gets to it first, it's going to be a sure breakaway, and the goalie has to make a split-second decision. Do I want to take on a breakaway, or do I think I can get to that puck first? And that's where you see the ever-exciting race to the puck, when the goalie comes sprinting out of the crease with the forward going the other way and an empty net open to him if he can get there first.
And when that happens, the goalie has to make the decision in a split second, like you said, because if they take the time to think about it to make that decision, it's too late.
But generally speaking, if you have a good stick-handling goalie, you have added a third defenseman.
Yep.
And that puck gets iced in, chipped in, or whatever else. And if you have a goalie that you can trust to come out and wrap that puck off of the end boards and back out the other way, going back to the first question, that already negates the opponent team's forecheck system. So two defensemen are heading back to get a puck, and the goalie's already moved it around so that the defenseman, when he does touch it, he's already moving forward up the ice with his head up looking for a pass. Oh, you are so far ahead in the game with that ability.
Right. And you also see the goalie will zip behind the net a lot of times. When the opposing team tries to wrap it around the boards behind the net, the goalie will come out and try to stop it. And that's just a simple takeaway.
You know,
if the other team's trying to rim it around the boards, the idea is you rim it around from one side to the other and you end up catching the winger on the other side of the ice. But if the goalie can get back there and stop it instead, then you gain possession. So the goalie can force a turnover, as odd as that may sound.
Especially on the power play, too. You'll see those goalies really work to get out of their crease to try to stop that dump
in,
because it is set play. That left winger, you can watch it with the Iceman all the time. That left winger hammers that puck in because they want to get it to the right wing half boards wrapped around the boards. And those goalies will do it. Even if they just slow it down, it throws the pacing off that allows an opportunity for the team to ice the puck.
Right. And now, in the modern-day professional game, the trapezoid behind the goal line prevents goalies from playing the puck down in the corners. You can only play it within the trapezoid directly behind the net.
Or in front of the goal line.
Yeah, or anywhere in front of the goal line. But yeah, behind the net, you cannot go into the corners outside that trapezoid, which I'm still not totally sure what the point of that is, because the NHL started it, and they're all about increasing offense. And goalies playing the puck in the corners, like you said, creates a third defenseman offensively, and that generates offense. So by implementing the trapezoid rule and limiting how much goalies can play the puck, you're actually hurting offense, which is counterintuitive to what they're trying to do in general. So, that's another element of goalies playing the puck that has changed over the years, because until they implemented the trapezoid, which – I believe that was after the 04 lockout.
Might have been.
I think that was when they started. It's been about a decade. Until then, there was no trapezoid behind the net, and goalies could play it wherever they wanted to.
Marty Brodeur and Dominic Hasek.
They were the reason, especially Brodeur. He was so good handling the puck. So
part of it, I think, is goalie safety, too, because Johnny Kells will tell you that his Blackhawks, it's part of their game plan. They just love to go down and just hit goalies and knock them unconscious like they did to Mike Smith and Phoenix a few years ago in the playoffs. So part of it is just the league just trying to stop the Blackhawks from cheating, as they do a lot.
Well, they're the Blackhawks. It's what they do.
It's what they do. Upcoming games.
Only two games left, both on the road this Friday at Fort Wayne at 7:05 Central Time. The Icemen don't really have anything to play for, but they can try to play spoiler and keep the Comets out.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
As mentioned, the Comets are in eighth place right now. They have not clinched a playoff spot, but they do control their own destiny.
If we win on Friday, I may just yell, "Suck it, Don Breck."
There you go. And then Saturday, the 12th, at Kalamazoo, the season finale at 6:30 Central Time. That is the K-Wings, or according to some people, the Quings.
I may use that.
Have you ever
too.
Heard that?
No, but that I
was
may use
that
it.
Was a thing that went around online that somebody, you know, they write out K-Wings. They are officially the Kalamazoo Wings.
Yes,
but they call themselves the K-Wings in order to differentiate themselves from the Detroit Red Wings, who are obviously big there. So it's written as K-Wings with a hyphen, but sometimes people don't include the hyphen, and even if you do, some people apparently think that it's pronounced Quings.
I like it.
So yeah, call them the Kalamazoo Quings, or just the Quings during the broadcast a time or two. That would crack some people up. But anyway, it's their home finale and fan appreciation night. They are currently number 3 in the East, but we're actually 3-0 against them this year, so it would be nice to make that 4-0 and go out on a high note like
we really
did last season.
I really hope they and Reading are battling for that last spot, and that second place has to go to, somewhere that no one wants to go to, like Florida or something like that. So because of the expense. I would love to see it a must-win game that we can, so we can derail them as well.
And make them pay more money to go on the road.
Something like that.
Gotcha. We will have about 30 fans at both games
awesome.
With discount tickets, thanks to the Booster Club. And, on the Icemen really don't have much to play for, but it would be nice to stay at or above 500. We're currently one game over 500, and either a loss and an overtime loss or a win in either game would guarantee us staying at least at 500, and I think that would be a nice nice stepping stone from last season. You would love to be in the playoffs, but at the very least, to go from the cellar last year to at or over 500 this year would be progress.
My dangling tangent.
Your dangling tangent?
My dangling tangent.
Oh, well, zip that back up.
Yep.
Finishing the show with a quick off-topic topic, because we just haven't gone off on enough tangents already. How are we on time?
We're not worried about time. We're worried about 24%.
Ooh,
6 minutes.
It's dwindling.
Yeah.
That's good. We're almost.
Like my dangling tangent.
We're almost done, so we're good to go on battery. As I mentioned, I spent the weekend in Chicago, which I think is a very cool city to visit, but I would not want to live there because the traffic is insane.
And that's what it comes down to. I love living in Detroit, but I cannot deal with the traffic anymore.
Oh, man. Chicago, cool to visit, but the traffic is nuts. It took us, we were downtown, and like I said, we were staying in Lansing, which is supposed to be like a 25-minute drive from downtown, and it took us like an hour and 10 minutes to get back to the hotel after we were in downtown because the traffic is just nuts. So, my question for you, if money wasn't an issue, so don't worry about the finances of doing it and where you're living and cost of living and all that, and you could live in any U.S. city, so that excludes Toronto, which I know would probably be your first answer.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, exclude Toronto, and for the sake of argument, let's also exclude our hometowns, so no Detroit for you. Where would you want to move? Any U.S. city?
I would, just knee-jerk, unprepared, would say Oklahoma City.
Really?
I have been down there for work. They have a up-and-coming awesome downtown district. They call it Bricktown. It's all brick paved, kind of like Main Street, but it's a little bit bigger. And you have the home of the AHL affiliate to the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. They play down there.
The Oklahoma City Barons.
Yep. And I just think that would I've actually thought about it, and I still have a an opportunity to work down there. And it's always interesting to me because it is a cool town, and I'd get season tickets to the Barons games and get to watch some really nice hockey. So that would be one of the first that I would pick.
To be clear, your opportunity is not in hockey. It's different.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. People are.
Yeah.
People shouldn't freak out that you're going to leave us to go work for the Barons.
No, that would be sweet, though.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I think my choice would be Nashville. That's one of my favorite.
And that was the other one.
Oh, yeah. I love Nashville. It's such a cool city, and you think Tennessee Bible Belt that it wouldn't necessarily be, but it's a really progressive town.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a really cool city to visit, but it's like the traffic isn't so insane that you would be driven nuts by it. And you know, it's kind of like Indy. I'm from Indy, and it's about the same size, and you know, you got all the big city stuff, but you don't have that insane New York, Chicago style traffic. So I love visiting Nashville, and if money wasn't an issue, I would definitely go there.
Now, I do have the retirement dream is Madison, Wisconsin. I would love to move to Madison, Wisconsin, be 30 minutes away from the University of Wisconsin.
Go to the hockey games.
And watch all of those games, because so many of those kids are first-round draft picks into the NHL and everything else. And I really enjoy the college hockey game. And who am I kidding? I love every game.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of 9-year-olds out there at Swander in the House League, and I'm having a blast. So, but to be the problem with Oklahoma City or Nashville or whatever, I love the cold. This winter has been the best winter I have had in a long time, and to have that every day for 9 months would be fantastic.
See, you're nuts. I want to go south because the winters aren't so cold. Yep. You know, although this year has been totally abnormal, but the bad thing about going further south is while the winters get milder, the summers get hotter.
Yes. Yep.
And I don't do heat well either, so I don't know. So what if weather was not an issue? For you like the cold, but
yep.
what if heat was not an issue moving south? Would it still be Oklahoma City, I guess?
Yeah, Gwinnett's pretty fun. So I could see Gwinnett on the, because then you could be on the outskirts of Atlanta. You would avoid most of the traffic down there, so that would be fun.
What about like San Diego?
I've never been out on the West Coast.
I haven't either. I've never been to San Diego. Yeah. That's I've heard great things about like Austin and San Antonio, but I've never been there, so yep. I wouldn't be able to say one way or the other. But I'm sure they're cool places to live, based on, you know, if 10 million Romans say that it's cool. Then
yep. But both of our mindsets though just kind of float around the hockey there as well. So
yeah.
That's why I'm thinking, you know, Gwinnett would be nice with the warmth.
Right.
Nice little area there.
Yeah. I would not be able to move to a city that doesn't have hockey.
No.
But like with you talking about Madison, people might think, well, why would you want to move just for college hockey? It is huge up there.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They draw like 13,000 fans a game for college hockey. So it's bigger than any minor league team you would ever imagine. Bigger than the Comets, bigger than the Hershey Bears. Almost bigger than both of them combined. So yeah, that is a big time event up there. But I did see interesting the USHL Top Junior A League here in the US is going to add an expansion team in Madison.
Oh, cool!
Next year. So
didn't the AHL try to?
Yeah, the Madison Ice Muskies.
Yes,
they lasted like half a season.
No. It lasted a training camp. They had done it just because. They needed 6 teams so that the Canadian players could have work visas.
No, they played games.
No.
Yes, they did.
Not the Ice Muskies.
I have the paperwork to prove it.
All right. Well,
we played them. Our second season opener was against them.
No.
Yeah, it was.
I will take that bet in a heartbeat.
Well, then.
That was the third year, the Ice Muskies. We had already left the league.
Yeah. No, we played the Ice Muskies.
No, we did not. We played the other Chicago team.
We played the Blaze.
Yes, we played the Blaze and the Shooters, and we played the Hitmen in Detroit.
Yes.
And then we played the Dragons.
The
when
Dragons
came back.
When they, yeah.
And we played the Muskegon team.
The
Michigan
West Michigan Blizzard.
Yes.
Right.
But I don't think
we played the Madison Ice Muskies.
Yeah, you might
the
be
fish.
Right there. You might be right there. All right, I back,
you
back
do track. You redact I'm, your
I, yes I am backtracking on that one after
great,
I think it through
another brilliant prediction or
no, it wasn't a prediction
or the Etch a Sketch brain
they came back though in that third season
and then they fell
and then
apart.
They
yeah
fell,
they didn't last
they yeah they folded after training camp, but they did it just as a ploy to get enough teams in that league because they were scrambling after the Iceman left.
So they fell apart during the second AHA season. Yep. And then they tried to bring it back.
It wasn't even a try. It was totally propped up.
Smoke just, and mirrors.
Yes, just so they could make the six-team thing before it all fell apart again. And Battle Creek, that was the other team.
Yeah, because for player visas, the league has to have six.
It has to be, by definition, a league. You have to have six teams. That's why the first year it was an association, because it was only four teams.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Interesting.
Final thoughts, the baby blue jersey.
Yeah, the jersey auction will be at Beef O'Brady's tonight, as everyone's listening to this, at 6 o'clock on Wednesday the 9th. Then the Guns and Hoses is at the Ford Center on Saturday at 7 o'clock. And then our show next week.
Next week.
Next show next week.
Yep.
We're good.
Oh, yeah. We'll be really good.
Playoff brackets. And
playoff brackets and the fact that I won't have to work anymore. No more road trips other than the ones that I've planned out with family. And that one, you might want to schedule overtime for that one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. So we'll get to spill some fun stuff.
We'll see about spilling some fun stuff.
Interesting.
Yep.
Should we call it the season finale? Sort of?
Yeah.
We're still going to do shows over the summer.
Yeah. No, let's call it the Iceman season finale.
Right.
And not call it our season finale.
We're going to keep having fun over the summer.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Cool.
All right. Well, with not much further ado, because we're down to play by play.
The race against the battery.
18%.
Woo-hoo! We made it.
He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster of IcemanManiacs.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Any information you need to know about the Evansville Iceman, you can check it out. IcemanManiacs.com.
He is the Dirty D, Derek Benigni, forgetter of laptop power cords.
But I did remember my zip drive for sending out my one-minute update to the radio stations, which I forgot last week.
Wow.
And I
you
did.
Are...
Yep.
You've got it all together, don't you?
Also in studio, Ivy Spivey with two Easter bunnies and Piccola, one of Guy Lepine's kittens.
Oh, that's one of Guy's? Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Here we go. Ivy's stepping up to the microphone.
Do you have anything to say?
Hi.
Do you have any stories about Guy Lepine and his kitties to update our listeners?
No.
What is your nickname for Michael Shockley?
Shocky.
Shocky.
Yep. She says, is my Shocky going to be there?
Really?
Yep.
You know, it's funny. The librarian at my high school, her last name was Shocky, and people would always come up, are you related to her? I'm like,
nice.
No. the one is Shocky and one is Shockley, so no.
My wife still likes our Italian pronunciation of the last name, Benigni.
Yes.
And I changed it back to Benigni
mm-hmm.
for the radio.
Which is wrong.
No, it's actually correct.
Do you not have any Italian heritage?
Yes, I do have Italian heritage.
So then it's Benigni.
But we also have Austrian heritage at this point now, too. But regardless, so when she's been on the Iceman Live shows and says, you know, I tell her to say her name when she asks a question, she says, Rebecca Benigni. I say, no relation.
Wait, are you sure it's not pronounced Lapoon?
All right, let's
Ivy's
get out of here.
At that, but she has no
let's
idea.
Let's get out of here so we can get our hands on some pink flamingos, right?
Hey, Ivy, did you get your hands on a pink flamingo?
Yes, I did.
Awesome. All right. We'll see y'all on the internet.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.